All right, everybody.
Welcome, everybody, to the show Life's a Banquet, the show that's edible, spreadable, and Zara.
Horrible.
Starring your hosts, me, Brendan Scott, and
me, Zara Tangora.
A show about ostriches, wine, and dough.
I'm drunk.
Always. Life's a banquet, life's a banquet, life's a banquet, banquet.
We begin the podcast.
Is it episode 16?
It's episode 17, actually.
No, it isn't. Really?
Yes. Welcome to episode 17 of Life's Banquet podcast. Podcast that explores the highs and lows of everything edible, spreadable, and Breton.
Horrible.
With your host, Breton Scott, and
Zara Tangora.
Cheers, cheers.
Wait a second. Pourable. Speaking of pourable, we're drinking a gamay.
Yeah, just a light gamay wine.
Gamay.
It's super gay.
So it is fall.
Fall has fallen upon us, Breton. Yep. How do you feel?
Well, it's day two. First day of fall. Yesterday was a really nice fall day.
It was great.
I saw some plaids. I saw...
Oh, yes. Plaid.
The farmer's market was... Squash was abound, although it was very warm in the morning.
It was quite warm. Mm-hmm. There was all kinds of squashes, pumpkins, eucalyptus was there. Lots of peppers.
Lots of peppers and still lots of plums and peaches.
And tomatoes.
So now for those of you that are from the South, okay. Second of
good
all.
Good for you.
Good for you. No, but
you
in,
lost
the
Civil
Coast,
War.
In the East
Losers.
Coast, I'm very shocked near October 1st, almost, mm-hmm. to see plums and peaches.
Yeah.
It's a little odd.
The plums, I'm not surprised about. The peaches are surprising.
Plums, you're right. Damson plums can come a little later.
Yeah, the Italian plums go on into the ball.
Hardy.
The peaches and nectarines are shocking, but I guess it's this little conspiracy that the Democrats are trying to push on us called global warming.
Yeah.
Liberal fake news media.
I talked to this seafood guy, and I said, God, all the stuff's coming so late. He said, yeah. He said, everybody... All the farmers, all the seafood people, is like, we're all talking about it. Like, the seasons are later and warmer and longer.
Yeah.
And I just said...
That's just how it goes. It's totally natural. There's nothing suspect
but
about
I'm
that.
I'm sure the farmers and people that are actually dealing with the earth have nothing. They don't know what they're talking about.
No, they're fools.
They're not aware of the farmer's almanac or the lunar cycles or the...
Mm-mm.
On the third tide of the second moon, do pick strawberries.
They're just a bunch of ding-dongs. I'll tell you what. I got bit... Mid-September, the other day, a mosquito came into my bedroom and bit both my eyelids.
By a longhorn beetle.
And I woke up in the morning.
Millipede.
I looked like fucking Rodney Dangerfield.
The millipedes are the size of those in Central America, here in New York City.
I woke up and a millipede was eating my sock.
Oh, speaking of socks, lots of wool socks and lots mm-hmm. of wool, lots of stoop sails.
Lots of stoop sails.
And today, now, here we are in New York City, and it's a gray day cast upon us.
I love it. It's mm-hmm. a day that all I want to do is make a vegetable soup.
Yes, I did make a warm pot of beans. Mayakoba beans. So Mayakoba beans, if anybody wants to know the best, this is actually not an opinion, it's a statement.
Yeah.
An exclamatory statement.
Please.
That based on truth, Mayakoba beans do make the best refried beans.
You working for Big Mayakoba? Mm-hmm.
Big Mayakoba. its cousin is Monsanto, but they changed the name and the divorce was messy.
Tell us about Mayakoba beans.
Mayakoba beans are, they call them peruanas.
Okay.
Peruana beans also. The people that make beans.
Okay.
Bean growers.
The giants.
The bean giants that know all about global warming, but they're not telling any of us.
Got it.
They're telling, exactly. Al Gore knows all about it. So listen, Mayakoba beans are soft and creamy yellow, and they cook up just like a regular bean. They kind of look like a pinto, but pale yellow.
Okay.
Same size. Anyway, they're delicious, and there's just something about them. You got to go in Rancho Gordo, as we've mentioned before.
Love Rancho Gordo.
Do you love Rancho Gordo beans? Because I do.
I love them. I put them on everything.
That's right. And if
I
you
use them as currency.
Go to their website, tell them we sent you, and they'll do nothing.
Yeah.
Because we don't
yet.
Have...
Yet.
Yes, but we support them.
Love them.
Yep.
California.
Yes. Yeah. Yep. So yeah, beans and greens and sauces.
I'm pretty curious about because I do think that you make the best beans, whatever kind of thing you do with beans, whether it be just like something you put in the slow cooker, if you're making like refried beans, if you have beans for nachos, Breton's beans can't be beat. You know, and I want to know your secret. Can you tell us?
I don't know. Well, that is true. You know what Preston said, my domestic partner and boyfriend, he said your beans really in the last 4 years have improved a lot. And I don't know what the...
Backhanded compliment.
Well, yeah, yeah. He said they used to be really good. He said now they're extra really good.
Okay, fine.
He did say that. He said they just kept getting better, which
they're delicious.
It was a compliment. Okay, don't know. I definitely don't overcook them because I usually cook them twice.
Oh.
Unless I'm just making a bean soup. So when I make my refried beans or like a bean stew,
okay,
I boil them first and then
cool
them.
But
I like to I cool them overnight in the refrigerator. Mm. That does something.
It must, because I got to tell all you listeners out there, anyone who has not been fortunate enough to eat Breton's beans.
Breton's beans, yep.
Breton's
so
beans.
So the other thing is they
good.
Say don't cook them with salt, but I do sometimes. It doesn't make them tough, but...
Interesting.
I think that was when beans weren't as, if you weren't getting it from Rancho Gordo. Rancho Gordo has really, I feel like they're fresher.
Yeah.
They're not sitting, you know, when you get Goya beans at Target.
Yeah.
Or some random grocery store in that bag that's, you know, $1.39 for a giant thing. We don't know how long those
They've
have been
sitting around. Yeah.
So I think maybe those that's might have tougher skin.
So start with good beans.
Start with good beans.
That's a good thing. I learned a little... hack, should we say. I'm kind of averse to the whole cooking hack terminology.
Like 2013.
I learned a hack, but
what's
the baking soda and the beans. First of all, obviously soak them overnight.
Yep.
Or for a couple hours, but a little baking soda or baking powder. I always confuse the two.
I think
this is a terrible tip.
Something with the word baking on it.
You put something in them and then you do it. So good luck. Bye.
If Zara didn't mention, we are pro kitchen
We're
cooks
also
and chefs.
Tired and drunk.
But yeah, so anyway, so my secret is when I take them out the next day, if you're listening now and want to make some great beans, I use a little duck fat or some pork fat, which I don't always. Sometimes I make them
that helps, though.
Vegan or vegetarian, and I find them to be very good. I usually put, for aromatics, I change a lot. You know, sometimes I like rosemary and thyme, and sometimes I just like
sage, rosemary,
like,
and thyme.
And Cherville. Did you ever hear the B-side?
It's the remix.
Cherville, tarragon.
Oregano.
Cilantro and marjoram. It's really good.
Remix.
So I saute some vegetables, and then I put them in a big cast iron pot, and I let them cook in the oven again.
Yes.
For a long time, uncovered at around 275, and it kind of, you know, draws out the moisture.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, your beans are really, really good. They're delicious. Olive oil. You know what I like on some beans? This is now a bean cast. Mm-hmm. Welcome to Life's Banquet, the beans.
We just changed seasonally.
The bean cast.
Plums are over. We nearly talked about plums. Screw plums.
This Gamay has gone right to my head.
What else cooking wise? Oh, Zara, you did a really, as if I don't know. Oh, Zara, you did a really nice party that I worked
you
with.
Interesting. We've been, okay, so if you guys have been missing Life's Banquet, we took a little extra to get this episode out because
we were working.
We were working.
Schlepping.
Schlepping. A lot of lifting
cooking,
and a lot
prepping,
of
prepping, chopping.
A lot of butt sweat.
Butt sweat. Diapers. no, I was going to say dicing.
Slicing. Chopping, burning.
Yeah, burning, grilling, gas.
Spilling.
Burns.
Laughing.
Grease on your shoulder.
Loving.
Okay, so
drinking.
Check this out. There is a guy that works for Zara sometimes, and his name, we won't call it, but it rhymes with even.
Bleaving.
It's like even.
And he told me the other day I won't listen to podcast.
He's
not going to hear this.
He's a British guy that is a chef also. And
love him.
Sorry. And they have that, like, they're always going to start. They're like the cats that, like, start licking each other and then they start attacking each other and then they end up snuggling.
That's exactly right.
And then they're, like, on the couch an hour later, like, sleeping together. Like,
I love
snuggling.
I love Steven, but he does get on my last.
He gives you the volleyball. He like does it on purpose.
He does.
He's like, oh, this way, Zara. And like, I don't know, I'm getting mad. But like, oh, wait, I didn't hear you. Like, and then it goes on. And then anyway, he takes his hand while we're doing a very I'm going to tell this story.
Please go for
it. He takes his greasy hand, and
his hand had been just recently reached into an oily vat of short ribs that had been marinating
oily short ribs. And he reached his hand, and Zara and I, she was almost getting in a fight with him and then didn't. Right.
But I
was like, oh, look at
her.
I was like, watch. And then he takes his hand covered in grease and says, oh, it's okay, Zara. And puts his in a very bad British accent. And he places his hand on her Chef White's right before the wedding event and puts a big paw print of grease on her shoulder. And I thought then, I was actually, I have to say this right now.
Please.
Zara has been working very hard. her self-help books were working. She went and took like 5 breaths and was like, oh, okay. All right. You know what? It's kind of funny, right?
I thought long and hard of what to do. I did initially. There's a certain...
I was like, put on a black shirt. I have an extra shirt. You can take mine. Like,
I just have the shirt off my back. Oh, don't freak out, Zara. Don't freak out. Everybody remove all the sharp objects. She's near the fire. She's near the hot grease. What is she going to do? She's going for the long 7-inch machete.
Oh, she's getting the chainsaw. Yep, she's going to cut off a finger at a time with a chainsaw.
She's going for the axe. Yeah. So one of the codes of the kitchen is cleanliness. And of course, you get messy through service. It happens. Things splash on you. Some people are very neat. I'm not actually particularly neat on my own person. I'm very neat in a kitchen. I always wipe surfaces down. I'm very neat as a person in my general life. I'm not the neatest on myself. I'll wipe my hands on my apron. However, it's just, you know, there's things about a kitchen that are kind of militaristic. So anyone who out there isn't familiar with kitchens or catering or just being a chef. Yeah,
perhaps you were in the military.
You don't wipe your dirty hand on your chef.
Or on your... It's like the soldier like going up to the lieutenant and saying...
Yeah.
Yeah, wiping the dirt that he like... Lieutenant, soldier!
Totally. And at this point, you know, there is no restaurant anymore. And everyone, when we work these events together, we're just a bunch of buds. Like, I'm in charge, but I don't consider myself the boss necessarily. But I was going to murder him. I came so close, and then I just, you know,
and then
what
you didn't.
I've been practicing, and I've been realizing it's usually not worth it to get your aggression out. And I just took a couple deep breaths. I said, you know, I'm not even gonna change this shirt and be passive aggressive. I'm gonna leave this thing on. We're gonna keep going on with the night.
You pulled an Eric Repair when Eric Repair, if you ever, there's another podcast where he talks about,
on Marc Maron,
oh yeah, Marc Maron, where he talks about how he used to be a horrible French chef that would verbally and practically physically abuse people, and one day he closed his eyes with the therapist and tried to imagine a flower, and he couldn't because all he saw was blackness.
Right.
And the very next day, he decided to be nice.
Yeah.
It's a great story.
It's a great story. The old Zara 5 years ago would have sent like a mail bomb to Stephen's house.
Mm-hmm. You would have first broke his pinky.
I'd be like, you know, I'm so sorry for breaking your pinky. I just sent you a package of cookies. And when you open it, it would have exploded.
Yep. Perfect.
Anyway, but the point is that Stephen is a fucking asshole. I'm just kidding. The point is that Steven is great and everyone is great. And it was actually really nice to get back into that. I love it when the band gets back together. Mm-hmm. We all get to like hang out.
Cooking.
It's just fun.
It's fun at all.
It's fun.
You know, you get really stressed out. These are long days.
They're 13, long days.
14, 12, 13, 14 hour days.
Yeah.
And for us old kids, it gets to be a long time.
It does. But like, you know, there's something about that camaraderie of like being the shit with people that for me like never gets old, like not yet at least. And
I love
it, like as much as like I'm happy not to work as a chef in a restaurant all the time.
Yeah, there's other opportunities for cooking.
I miss that, like broing down.
Well, so Zara worked then the following week, pretty much a few days later.
Yeah, a couple days later.
Nice little Spanish themed party.
That was also so fun.
And so we were in this really wonderful building. It was in Manhattan, and they didn't have any running water, which was fine. We made it work.
We made it work.
We brought a deep fryer.
Yeah.
Deep fryer fried on somebody's office table.
Yeah.
In the gallery.
But it all worked.
I went and I talked. There was two chefs that we were working with, and I was cutting serrano ham in the front, and they were deep frying in the back. And I went back at one point to get a croqueta, which were delicious.
Thank you.
Spicy croquettes.
Thanks.
Spanish croquettes. And I went and I said, isn't that weird that we're just plugging a thing and can put a kitchen wherever these days? And then Jordan just said, yeah, isn't it funny that tomorrow these people are going to be writing invoices on this desk that we were making fried Spanish croquettes? I'm like, that's so
The world is weird.
Wonderful.
I know. It was a great party and great vibes. And I think, you know, this was a huge work crunch this month. And I initially was like, really like, oh man, this is going to be crazed. But it's over. And it was so, I'm tired, but it was so fun.
You're tired, but you get paid for it. And it's part of the job. And
people were chill.
There was so many positive comments. And that is the one thing that when you do work the food and you do care and you get good ingredients and you do put great effort, and it is stressful sometimes. And sometimes you just want to cut corners and you can't because that's just not what you do.
Yeah.
And then at the end of the day, good people do notice. And when they tell you and that's why you should tell everybody should, by the way, everybody should tell people that when you have good food, when people are like, oh, I'm afraid to talk to the kid, go into the kitchen wherever I am. And I'm like, don't go in there. I'm like, watch this. And I swing open the door and I'm like, hey, chefs, I love your food. It was the best I've ever had.
Yeah.
And you tell people and they kind of look up from there, like, there's always like a neck tattoo guy that looks up with like one raised eyebrow. Someone and he's looking at you like, wow.
Someone puts their cigarette out in a steak. Who goes there?
Who goes there? What does this matey say that we have a nice, do you like my steak? And then he's like, listen to that. He liked my steak. Yeah.
Oh, he liked it. No, but you're right. It is very nice to give positive reinforcement.
Those are Irish pirates, by the way.
They're Irish Jamaican pirates. But anyway, you're absolutely right. It feels very good because chefs and cooks and dishwashers and porters and servers and waiters and
everybody.
Managers work really hard. So anyone out there who doesn't have restaurant experience, I think
oh my God, that's a baby.
A loud,
that's like
rude baby.
Gay kryptonite.
Excuse me.
Just kidding. I love babies. Oh,
who doesn't? So. But anyway, anyone out there who isn't maybe worked in restaurants and just needs to know that, like, yeah, complimenting when you have a nice time wherever you are, catering, we're at a restaurant. It's great. People love it.
The farmer's market. Hey, nice eggplant.
Uh-huh. Exactly.
Wink, wink.
Hey, fabulous eggplant.
Yeah, I noticed the girth of your zucchini are really nice.
That cucumber is bumpy, but I like it.
Speaking of girth and things.
Should we get into our topic?
Yeah, I was thinking about that.
Okay, cool.
So when I was at the farmer's market,
go ahead.
And I was getting a bag of something.
Yes.
And I talked to the guy. I said, hey, weed. No, yeah, it was actually crack cocaine, but I sold it for a much higher price. I was talking to the fishmonger.
Okay.
And I was going to get some squid, and I thought, let's get some clams instead.
Oh.
And I said, do you make these? He's like, no. He's like, oh, my God.
Did he make them? Like, was he like, God, Mother Earth? Hello.
Sorry.
Did you make these?
Do you harvest? Harvest the clams. He said, no, but I used to when I was a kid. He's like, my dad used to make me do it. And he said, you just take the rake and go through mud. I said, each clam? He said,
it's a thing.
And I said, I will never complain about 50 cents a clam again.
No, absolutely not. It's grueling. I'm from Long Island, obviously.
Really? Yeah.
So I don't know if you know this, Brenton, but I'm from Long Island. But clamming is actually a thing. And people be clamming. My friends were clammers when I was growing up, like summer jobs. Everyone was out on them clam boats. And it's hard.
Clamming.
My grandfather was, my dad used to tell me that my grandpa was the cheapest person alive. He was like old school Italian guy, came from like nothing. And so he would like basically anything he could get for free was like for him. So he'd go out and dig up clams. I'm not even sure if he knew if they were like okay clams to eat. He would also pick dandelion greens.
Oh, yeah.
But not like out of like a gorgeous field or something. He would like pick them out of the driveway. And then like they grow out of the cracks. And he would like eat them. And
that's what we should do with purslane next year.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, freshly
decorate
harvested
it
purslane.
With, like, purslane is the plant that grows between the cracks of
can't
asphalt.
With purslane.
Yeah.
I don't like it. It's too sour and slimy for me. It doesn't really do it for me.
It's too sour.
I used to have it on the menu with Eberzy, and I'll have it. If somebody makes me a purslane salad, I'm not going to, shove it away.
The name is really attractive, and I think that's really what gets
great
people.
Marketing.
Purslane.
Perfect branding.
It's like the herb roux, like roux and purslane salad. That would be actually horrible.
Very sour and slimy. It's like not worth it.
So do tell me about what you know.
Okay. I know a lot about clams.
I know. We're talking to a real New Englander here.
Yeah. I'm very clam savvy.
Is Long Island part of New England?
It's right on the it's on the border,
but like
or
not
cusp,
but kind of like
well, we don't talk
culturally
for New England. It depends. If you're on the North Shore, where I'm from, if you're on the South Shore, you're definitely not from New England.
Wow.
Mary.
Yeah.
Mary O'Malley. You're trash. Just kidding. I love you.
South Shore, trash.
You're trash. So a little bit about clams. They spend most of their lives partially buried on the ocean floor under sand.
Sand.
They're, you know,
They're a bivalve.
Exactly. Because they have two shells of equal size connected by two abductor muscles that have powerful burrowing foot.
They have a foot.
Yeah.
Clams have one singular foot, not two.
They have one foot, and they also have kidneys, a heart, a mouth, a stomach, a nervous system, and ba-dum-bum-ching, an anus.
Mm. Well, they got it. Yeah, well, it has to go somewhere.
I thought that was interesting, though, because I've talked to a bunch of vegans who, all my vegan friends, I haven't talked to any vegans. I've read that
vegans.
Yeah,
you don't have any vegan friends.
I'm like, I talked to a bunch of vegans, never.
In 2004.
I would never talk to a vegan, ever. If I see a vegan, I say, no, thank you, I don't want to talk to you.
Just kidding, vegans. You can listen to this podcast.
You can, but you're missing life. Vegans will eat oysters because they said, like, they don't have a nervous system, but I guess I didn't really read about oysters, but I would think like oysters and clams were the same.
Some vegans won't have a...
Honey. I mean, some vegans won't eat a grass-fed ribeye.
Yeah.
Which I think is odd.
It's weird. My vegan friend never eats roast chicken.
I know. It's like very strange.
But it's chicken. It's white meat.
But then you come across those vegans who are like, I'm vegan except like I eat bacon. And it's like, go to hell.
Yeah.
You're just in it for like the OkCupid profile or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So some clams live about only 1 year, but there's a lot of clams that actually live like 500 years.
Are those the giant clams that we hear about?
They are the giant clams.
Oh my God. But giant clam.
Go ahead.
No, I picture a mega giant clam like opening up and you going in the ocean floor. I'd be like, hey, like,
yeah,
we're scuba diving. Johnny, come in here. And then it's like,
and then you get like live inside it for years. You know what I think would happen if, God forbid, you ever got into a plane crash? Everyone else on the plane would die except for you.
Yeah.
And you would like find yourself in the middle of the ocean. And you'd be like, well, got to make the best of it. And you would dive under the ocean and find like this magical like sea life. And I can picture you like swimming up to a giant clam and it like befriends you and gives you like a snorkel mask. Like, like everything's
fine
for you.
It has like oxygen that
exactly
goes through like a tiny bubble.
Yeah,
and then
you would just be under like, ooh, what is this? Kind of like the Little Mermaid. Look at these things. Aren't they neat?
You found the one pocket of oxygen in the entire Pacific.
I think it could work for you. So there's a bunch of different species of clams, obviously. The species of clams, Mercenia, is also called the quahog clam. And there's like quahog, which is, I think that, isn't that the place in Family Guy, quahog?
I think so. I don't know. I don't know much about.
So those are the ones that
culture.
That like the quintessential kind of like, I believe like a little neck clam is that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And those shells used to be used by the Native American Indians as wampum. Currency. Yeah. And those are the ones also that breed of clam are the ones that get really giant to be the giant clam.
Giant clams.
And then we have gooey duck clams. We have, which are like have the big giant
tongue. Looks like a cow tongue.
Penis-y thing.
Yeah.
We have razor clams.
We those long.
Soft shell clams,
which are, those are more the Ipswich ones. Ipswich and Essex.
Yes.
And those are the ones that are, I have a little story about Ipswich clams later.
I can't wait to hear it. And then there's also Manila clams, which are the teeny little guys.
Teeny little babies with multicolored. Yeah, those are great.
Oh my God. They're delicious.
Great linguine with clams.
Funny that you mentioned linguine with clams because I was also reading about clams, which cultures use them the most. Obviously in New England, we have a lot of clams, you know, clam chowder, fried clams, big part of kind of like American cooking culture, really big in European cooking culture and like, you know, England and the northern France and southern France. But then the one thing that I didn't read in Chinese cooking.
Of course.
And Japanese cooking, lots of clams.
So the world.
What I didn't realize about clams, where I've never seen it before in America, maybe you've seen it, but in India. A lot of clam curries in Malabar, apparently.
You know what? I was on the coast. I was on the Malabar coast for 10 days, and I had some clams there.
And?
Lots of seafood. It was delicious.
Really?
They were delicious.
You know, it's funny because we don't have very good Indian food in New York City.
No, also we generally have the most, it's mostly northern.
It's very, and it's also like very like generic for American palates. It's very hard if you're, especially in in New York City proper, you go to Queens and Jackson Heights, you find some more interesting things. But well, listen,
the country is more than 2 billion people.
Right.
And it's not super massive, but it's a very large country with lots of different people and tons of different cultures. And
right,
that would be just saying like America's only hamburgers. And you know, there's so many regional cuisines that we don't even know exist.
Right. Well, I'd never really thought of clams being part of Indian cuisine.
I know. I know how to bang lassi in India. A bang lassi is that it's a marijuana milkshake.
Okay, perfect. Because that, first of all, just sounded a little bit like I didn't know where you're going. I'm thinking lassi, bang the collie. Lassi.
So clams.
Yeah, so clams. So I have a couple other interesting things I wanted to tell you. They have rings on their shell, much like how trees have rings and you can tell how old they are.
I did not know that.
And that's how old they can tell they are. Also, something that they find in the rings of the shell of a clam is...
Rings in the shell of a clam and the things.
Rings in the shell of a clam and the things. The scientists have used clam shells now to determine that what we were talking about before, jokingly, but in all seriousness, is proof about climate change, because they can tell which years were what temperatures by how it affects the clam shell. And since they're so old, they take these like 500-year-old clams and they're able to like determine the fact that like the temperatures have gotten warmer.
I'm really glad over that there's people that are doing that instead of cooking.
It's incredible. It's so cool of like all the things you can do with a clam. So anyway, did you say that you wanted to talk to us a little bit about...
Well, I was thinking, this summer, one of my summer goals, which is, well, it's officially fall, so...
Yeah, so maybe it could be a fall goal?
Yeah, it's a fall goal. Okay. Or maybe it's a summer 20... You know, I learned to let things slide over to the next year. Mm-hmm. Much like a
carryover cooking.
Yeah, it's like a rollover minute.
Perfect.
And it's okay, add it to next month's goals. No problem. So, Hakuna Matata.
Hakuna Matata.
So, I was thinking about Ipswich clams. Now, okay. Those of you... I'm not that new to the East Coast, but I've been here for over 12, 13 years, and it took, I'm from Wisconsin, and there are some lake clams there, which are probably the size of
lake clam?
Yeah, they're the size of a thimble, and they probably taste like a pebble of sand.
Get the hell out of here. Stay. I'm just kidding. Finish the podcast. Stay.
Anyway, okay, so I was thinking about Ipswich clams. Now, I had read an article about... the author David Leita, who writes for the New York Times. He also has a blog called Leita's Culinaria.
Oh,
and
cool.
It's L-E-I-T-E. He's great. He's wonderful. I wrote him an email once. He responded. He's great. David, if you're listening, let's talk about clams. Anyway, he wrote an article for the New York Times called In a 64 T-Bird, Chasing a Date with a Clam. And he's from Connecticut, I believe, and he just wrote this article about how he went to all these different fried clam shacks and this. And the clam shacks are basically the barbecue joint.
They're the
New England. It's like New England's barbecue in comparison to the South. And I've been to a few, which I do love. So basically there's this, like, who started the fried clam?
Yeah.
And Ipswich clams are also AKA whole belly clams. So when you get a fried Ipswich clam, I think they're more like a fried oyster.
Yeah.
They have a really strong seafood flavor. Mm-hmm. They're not for everybody. They're a little juicy. Those are also the ones that we were talking about, known as a softshell clam. And they are very difficult to harvest. And apparently there was this, the story of, and I got this from, it was called Nancy Hannon Jenkins. She wrote an article in 2002 about, trying to find the beginning of where the clams came from.
Okay.
And there was a gentleman named Chubby Woodman. Chubby.
Ooh.
A guy, and he and his wife had potato chips. They sold them. They were from Massachusetts, Essex, Massachusetts, way up in the north, west of Boston, I think. And I actually don't know my geography, but Google it. It's fabulous. Google Earth right now. And anyway, so apparently the story goes, there was a bucket of clams. This fisherman comes in and he says, "Hey, Chubby, why don't you fry them up like the potato chips?"
Oh.
And Chubby goes, "Yeah, when it was a slow day," he's like, "Yeah, let's fry some clams up." And he fried some clams and he said he had eureka. Like, this is it. And so
amazing.
Woodman's the last name, he and his wife Bessie, and they're fabulous. And they experimented the next couple of weeks and tried to figure out a batter. And they decided that dipping it in milk and then a cornmeal mixture. But cornmeal up there back then in Massachusetts, if you have to remember that cornmeal is different than if you buy, Quaker cornmeal.
Yeah.
There's white cornmeal. There's They actually said that Mussarina is probably a better substitute if you want to make this more, at home.
Because it's finer.
Yeah, it's finer. And then they call it corn flour because mm-hmm. there's all kinds of thickness. So you want to make sure it's not too gritty.
Right.
Anyway, so apparently they experimented. They fry up some clams. They serve it on July 4th. The rest is history. Everybody now has a clam shack. And you just have these delicious fried clams.
Oh my God. Tartar sauce.
Tartar sauce. I don't know when that came into the thing, but yeah, so they're soft shells. So the farmer actually has to go out in these muddy flats, right? And mm-hmm. this area is part of the area called the Great Marsh. Now, yes, it's in Massachusetts. The Great Marsh, it encompasses an area of approximately 17,000 acres. And apparently there used to be a lot more Ipswich clams. So it's Ipswich, Essex, and Rowley.
Wow.
R-O-W-L-E-Y. Those are the main areas. And I actually didn't know this. And guess, nowadays, guess who's shucking all those clams?
And you, because, machine.
Yeah, no, humans. Humans really? Have to do it because you still have to, although they're soft shell clams.
Yeah.
Clams. I was thinking soft shell crabs.
Yes.
Cambodians. Cambodian Americans are the...
Wow, really?
Yeah, the major players. This article that I found was dated a while ago, but I can't imagine that it wouldn't be too different now.
Right. Well, I know the hard shell clams are shucked by machines.
Machines, yeah.
I found that out in the next story I'm going to tell you.
Anyway, and I did... there is another... There's... So if you read David Leitch's article, he goes through and I think he tries 25 or so places and he tells you about his three favorite...
Oh my God, I can't wait.
Three or five favorite ones. It was really interesting because I haven't been to any of them, but there's the one in, I think it's in, it's Kennebunkport, Maine.
Oh, my favorite name for a city ever. Yeah. Kennebunkport.
Kennebunkport, and it's Mrs. Agalakis. And her father started the Clam Box, which I haven't been to yet. So
we got
to
go.
Yeah, I'm going to try to call Mrs. Agalakis and see if she'll give
me
an interview.
We got to go.
But, and she's very, very specific about, you know, apparently the ones that are in the muddy waters are much sweeter.
Yeah.
And then there's smaller ones and you can actually go and say like, hey, I want the smaller ones and I want them a little bit crispier than normal.
Sweet, sweet mud.
And she's all about like giving you the best clam experience.
Oh my God, please. Yeah, can we just,
yeah, we have
when
to
you get
go.
Back from Spain, we got to go. Britain's going to Spain next week. Well, that is absolutely fascinating. I love a clam shack. I love fried clams. And I feel like I really need to expose myself to a little bit more of that. And I don't think that clam shacks are just for summer. Because another great thing you find in a clam shack other than just fried clams is chowder.
Chowder. Look, I think of like the tolling wayfarer, like riding the horse through the fog and coming in on a cold winter's night and be like, I would like a chowder.
Yeah, with like one of those perfect, gorgeous, like wool blue petticoats and like a red gin blossomed nose and like.
Yes. And look at a chowder in a bread bowl, please.
Yes. Do you have gluten-free bread bowls?
Yes. Do you have gluten-free bread bowls? Sorry, I'm just trying off that, like, I'm doing the keto diet.
No potatoes. Thank you. So chowder has its roots in the Latin word caldera, which originally meant a place for warming things and later came to mean a cooking pot. The word caldera also gave us the word cauldron. And in French became chowderie.
Yes, I've heard of that. Like chaud, that's chaud.
Like chaud, right? Because chaud means hot.
Chaud meant something. Oh, that's chode.
That's chode. That's a short, fat dick.
No, the chode is the area between the anus and
That's a taint.
Okay. I guess in Wisconsin, our colloquialism is different.
Chode has always meant a short, fat penis. Like if you find someone who's
that's called a Coke can.
Oh.
Go ahead, continue.
Okay, so anyway, and then I'm lost. Okay, so then it also is thought to come from the old English word jowter, which was a fish peddler, J-O-W-T-E-R.
A jowter.
Yes. Jowter. So early Europeans, they had it being made in like Cornwall and across the English Channel. France, from basically, you know, throwing a bunch of fish and seawater on a cauldron. And then what I learned initially is that it was thickened with old biscuits, ship's biscuits.
Oh, yes.
So it wasn't just like, you know, start a roux. You know, it was thickened with biscuits.
Throw the dried up.
Like, exactly.
Sea dried.
Throw everything disgusting in there. So I have the earliest recipe that I can find from the year 1751 in print for chowder from the Boston Evening Post. Here goes. First, lay some onions to keep the pork from burning. Ouch. Because the chowder, spelled C-H-O-U-D-E-R, there cannot be turning. Brett, you want to take it from here?
Then lay some pork in slices very thin. Thus, you and chowder lovers must begin.
Next, lay some fish cut crossways very nice. Then season with pepper, salt, and spice.
Parsley, sweet marjoram, savory and thyme. I told you the B-side was coming. Then biscuit next, which must be soaked sometime. That's not fair. You can't rhyme time and time. Go
I know. Ahead. Thus, your foundation laid, you will be able to raise a chowder high as Tower of Babel.
I think it was Babel.
Oh, right. You will be able to ride. Okay.
For by repeating o'er the same again, you make us such a chowder for a thousand mean.
Last a bottle of claret with water, Eno, to smooth them. You'll have a mess with some call omnium gatherum.
It gets weird. Poetry was so fascinating.
It gets very weird back then. So, anyway, chowder, we all know it. We love it. We hate it. I love it. If you're a vegan, it's
Manhattan
not for you.
Manhattan chowder, get out of here.
I don't know. I've already discussed this. I like Manhattan chowder.
Okay.
And when you mix it with the white, it's Long Island chowder.
Long Island chowder.
Long Island chowder. We have to make it. So I want to tell you a story today about clam chowder. So on Life's Banquet, we try to talk about the highs and lows. Mm-hmm. I think going forward, we're going to try a format maybe where we tell a story that's high and low in the same episode. But at least this episode we're going to. We'll see how it works. Please give us your feedback. Life'sBanquetShow@gmail.com.
That's right.
I want to tell you a story that I found a low about clams and clam chowder. It was about the famous James Cameron film, the most expensive movie ever made, starring yours truly, Leonardo DiCaprio, and Kate Winslet.
More expensive than Big Trouble in Little China?
Yes, more expensive than The Room. The film Titanic, the year 1997.
Picture it, 1997. Hip-hop is in full swing. There was a thing called the internet, but people thought it was a...
It was just a place for pets.com.
They're like, internet? Like, what does that do?
AOL Messenger? What about the Oregon Trail? Will we play that? So while filming the film Titanic on location in Halifax, Nova Scotia...
Great town.
Leo and Kate, not on set. Who was on set? Little old guy named Bill Paxton. Mm. And Jim Cameron himself. So... Anyway, they're filming, they're wrapping up, they're on location. It's about like 100 crew members. They're about to go to Mexico the next day. Before they leave, the catering company makes a giant spread, all kinds of like lovely, luxurious local seafood.
Oh my God, that would be us.
I know. And the centerpiece, a bubbling hot pot miles wide of clam chowder.
The largest rondo in the history of rondos.
The biggest. People.
By the way, rondo is a large pot.
A large pot.
A cauldron.
People are going back for seconds and thirds. Third, this
fourth,
chowder.
Fifth, six, seven,
they're
eight,
shoving
go.
It in their pockets. They're drinking it. They're filling up gallon. Can I have a to-go bread bowl? So anyway, about 30 minutes after this chowder fest wraps up, people start feeling really weird.
Uh-oh, this is not our
really,
catering
really
company.
Crazy. No.
Never mind.
People start feeling really crazed and strange. Jim Cameron and Bill Paxton look at each other and they're like, should we like be concerned? Do we think it's maybe a norovirus? James Cameron goes to his room, starts making himself throw up. Yeah. All of a sudden, everyone realizes they're tripping out because, okay.
What?
They're tripping out. So everyone goes and it starts happening in like different, as it's been explained.
Had a clam ayahuasca experience?
Basically.
A clam ayahuasca.
I got all my information from this, by the way, from Vanity Fair and Vice. Who did an amazing article about this. It's
and
really
we're reviving
Vice.
It and making it alive.
And it's coming to life. So they all go to the hospital. They get tests, right? Turns out someone laced this clam chowder with PCP.
Mother of pearl.
Clam pearls. PCP. So at the hospital, hilarity, drama, comedy, freaking out, all kinds
crying,
of different
experiences. I cried.
I laughed it, much like the movie Titanic. So at some point, James Cameron gets stabbed in the face with a pen. by another person. Doesn't care because he's so high on PCP. Bill Paxton decides that he's going to ride this out alone as the true fucking gangster that he is, RIP. And he gets a 12-pack and goes back to the hotel by himself and gets drunk to ride out the trip by himself.
That's something I would do. But like, get out. I was like, you must stay in the hospital. Like, I need a pen, a paper, and a 12-pack of Negro Modelo.
But first, I have to stab James Cameron in the face.
Sorry, your cheek looked puffy. I thought it was a zit.
So anyway, James Cameron is stabbed in the face, doesn't care, has a pen hanging out of it. Bill Paxton has left the building, and he's going to go home and just hang out by himself. There is a conga line and wheelchair races that start happening throughout the hospital. No one will stay in their rooms that they put them in because everyone is tripping on PCP.
This is the Titanic B-side?
Yes. So anyway, everyone's going insane. Eventually, they all like drink charcoal. They're like fine. They start to come down and they have to then eat food from the same catering company again and film all night long. Again, because it was the last night of filming and they missed their filming because they're all tripping on PCP. So the cinematographer, Susie Amos, who is now James Cameron's wife, didn't eat the chowder. And to this day, James Cameron, like, I guess, thinks it was her.
Still is like kind that of an inside it. Joke. Be like,
remember that time you tried to sabotage me? It probably was her. Well, I've heard he's an asshole.
Don't worry. Apparently Titanic did very well in the box office.
I've heard good things. So they still don't know who it was. They fired the catering company, but they think that, they don't think it was the catering.
That would be me. Be like, I didn't do
it. It wasn't me.
Be like, Breton like, did
I did
it.
Have PCP, but I didn't put it in the clam they chowder.
Like, that was something that I'd get in trouble for. Like, totally. No, I really didn't do it, but like, it just all gets down to Breton. Be like, he's the fuck up drunk.
Who could it be? And yeah. It's just like you.
He's like Mrs. Peacock. Mrs. Peacock did it.
Anyway, they think it was a guy that was like fighting with the catering company before. And he like did it. But that is kind of like the most amazing thing I've ever heard about.
Well, at least he
didn't PCP, clam chowder, movies, anything. But it really has everything in it.
Wow.
Isn't that an amazing story?
That's a very insider info. This is like incredible. VH1 pop-ups gone
behind
viral.
Music.
Yeah, behind, yeah.
And then my high story that I wanted to tell was about pearls.
Now we all love a pearl.
I love a pearl necklace.
You know, in the gay world, when they call her, when they say, oh, she's a pearl clutcher girl.
What
that means is like, you know, my grandmother was kind of a pearl clutcher, kind of that. Think of that neurotic housewife that kind of always walks around.
Oh,
like,
my grandmother was a pearl clutcher.
Like,
too.
Oh, it was the chicken over roasted. Oh, and like,
yeah.
Like,
oh, where's my scotch and soda?
Like, oh, the pearls. Uh-huh. And I remember I used to kind of be like that when I was 25 and I used to work at the Ritz Carlton. And all the waiters, they were all these like old 60-year-old gay guys. Like, listen, mirror, we got a pearl clutcher here. And I'd be like, what? They're like, I would always get in the weeds and clutch my fake pearls. Like, I'd like grab my shirt.
Like Tom Cruise in that first scene in Cocktail when he bartends and he's like,
oh no, I have to put the poisson down, but I didn't put the tiny poisson spoons. Oh, like, yeah, sorry, that's a cheese. Insider's joke.
That's funny. So I always thought the pearls just came from oysters, but they don't. They can come from any mollusk. They can come from scallops. They can come from mussels.
Good to know.
They can come from clams. And the ones that come from
I'm glad you didn't say scallop.
Why would I say scallop?
Because certain people say scallop.
What kind of people do that?
Like scallop as if it were S-K...
Like S-K-A-L-L-O-P?
Yeah, scallop.
No,
like
I say scallop.
Scallop. Anyway, go ahead.
Okay, so anyway, you can find it in a scallop or a scallop. You can find it in any kind of mollusk. But the ones that come from the quahog clams are actually the most valuable pearls. They're even more valuable than the ones found in oysters. But they only come from the quahog ones. They don't come from natural clams. And they have a purple hue to them. And different pearls that are found in different mollusks have different hues. So the ones that come from clams are purple and they're very, very valuable. And
that's really cool.
It is pretty cool. So most people think that a pearl comes from a little bit of sand that's like the old rumor.
Yeah, that's what I always thought.
But it's not true. It's a complete lie. Clams form pearls because of their shells. A clam shell has two half shells joined by a hinge. The shell holds the clam's soft body, a small foot, a gland, and gills.
As we talk about,
feed continually, opening and closing their shell, and that's when they get like different irritants in there. Whenever the shell opens, and irritants serve as the basis for a pearl to form.
Ooh, so we got to be giving our clams some bourbon.
Exactly. They want things that are going to bother them. So when an irritant, like a
piece
of shell.
So they need to eat gluten. Okay.
Well, yeah. They need something that bothers them. So a piece of shell, a parasite, or another particle, it can't be sand. Because if you think if it was sand, there would be bajillion, the whole ocean would be full of pearls.
And then they'd no longer be valuable.
Exactly. So the reaction causes the clam to secrete multiple layers of calcium carbonate type substance, which coats the irritant, and that's why you get a pearl.
Well,
isn't that incredible?
Well, color me blind, Batman. I didn't know
color
that.
Color me pearls.
Color me pearls.
One such pearl was found in the year 2009. An off-duty police officer was having a clam
Mike
chowder.
Mike Sabrino.
It was his birthday dinner. He orders chowder.
He gets a half dozen Ipswich fried clams, side of chowder.
He bites into a giant pearl.
Oh, God.
So it doesn't break his tooth. He never thought it was anything. Gives it to his daughter. She puts it in a jewelry box. A couple years later, they're watching TV and they see a story about a Virginia Beach woman who found a quahog pearl and allegedly is worth a few thousand dollars. They bring it to a neighbor who happens to know about these kind of things. She says, oh, you know, it happens all the time. They're really valueless. It's no big deal. They get it appraised. Yada, yada, yada. Sells to a Japanese businessman for $16,500.
How about that?
Puts his daughter through college.
There you go. At the community college.
Exactly. Yeah. She gets to go to one class one
she
time.
She got to one class.
Yeah.
She did the online class at Yale. It's fabulous.
Exactly.
She's now working.
She's one of our cater
waiters. Wow.
Isn't that incredible?
Clams. You know
clams.
What's so funny? Let me tell you something.
Please.
And then, you know, we're going to move on with our favorites and such, but clams, when I think about people that get sushi or people that aren't from the East Coast or from coasts, is that people have this thing about clams.
Like, yeah.
Oh, they're dirty.
They're chewy.
They're dirty.
They're smelly.
They're rude. They're rude. They talk. They just like always talk about themselves.
They're narcissists.
Narcissists.
Serial killers.
It's nonstop. Go you name it. A clam's done it. Like, oh God, they don't shut up like a clam. Like, shut them up like a clam. Clam it up, clam. Like, oh, they smell like a clam. Oh my God, have you seen my clam?
Oh my God, he fucks like a clam.
Fucks. Anyway, none of those things have ever been said, but they are now in Bushwick. So the thing about clams is that they're my favorite.
Me too. I love them.
And razor clams are delicious. I mean, and people get, now there's a lot of different kinds of clams. And I think that's where people get a little confused when you say like cherry stone, Manila, Ipswich, whole belly,
little neck.
Oh, there's all these things. And I still find myself confused.
I do too. Yeah.
And, but basically, you know, a clam is not a clam. It's not a clam.
No, not all clams are created equally.
No.
Should we talk about our top three?
Yeah.
So top three this week, how about what is your three favorite clam dishes?
I'll tell you this right now. Number one, or I'll save number one for last.
Yeah, start with number three.
Okay, number three is Clams Casino.
Love.
Okay, because it's classic and the name.
What is Clams Casino?
Clams Casino apparently was, I don't know, they said it was invented potentially at the, I think it was a hotel called Casino Hotel somewhere.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I read about this. So it was like some little hotel somewhere, I don't know, it was in Massachusetts or Rhode Island, somewhere in the East Coast, and this woman wanted some clams dish, and it's basically baked clams.
Mm-hmm.
And then you take the clams out, right? Or you put breadcrumbs and bacon.
You can do it a different way. Sometimes you could take the clams out, chop everything up. My mom and I do it with just like breadcrumbs, bacon on top, butter, parsley, lemon, garlic. Yeah.
I think the basic thing is you take breadcrumbs and bacon.
Yeah.
And then
anything else is up to the imagination.
Some tomatoes, some peppers,
exactly.
Whatever. But like you want the breadcrumbs, you want the bacon.
The bacon must be there. Yep. Yes.
And then you want to bake those.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then they're serving little dishes. And they're
great.
Clams Casino.
Fun.
Perfect. Baked clams are great. Okay, my number two, and this is a toss-up between number one, is linguine with clams.
Vongole.
Vongole. Like, oh, you got a cream sauce instead of white sauce? Like, I don't know, it's just a sauce.
It's just butter.
Butter, but listen, you can take...
Mounted butter sauce.
You like whisk that butter sauce like once you cook the clams, and you could add some cream, but I mean, butter is cream when you think about it.
Yeah.
And then my number one...
Wait, I have a question. I need to ask you a little bit more about the linguine vongole.
Yeah, go ahead.
I have a personal preference for this.
Okay.
It doesn't look as good. I like linguine vongole with white clam sauce or red clam sauce, no shell. Because I don't like to dip my fingers into the hot pasta. I like always taking the clams out of the shell, chopping them, mixing them in. What do you think?
I agree. I think if you're going to Instagram it, you want the shell.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not going to Instagram it. I mean, this is something we have to talk about as cooks now.
I know, it's weird.
It's kind of weird, but like it's something to think about.
Yeah.
Whatever. And also when you present it too, like, do you want to have I like to put it in. Some people say the flavor's better.
I give it a hard no.
You know what? Zara gives a hard no. I give it a, like, I would probably keep the shells in.
Yeah, I don't do it. You know what I will do? I'll make the pasta with, like, chopped up clams.
What if we put some
and then
clams
you put a couple on top?
Edge.
That's exactly.
Go.
I'll do all that right. For show.
Compromise. Yeah, see? Turns out we're...
Exactly.
Everybody's living a good life. And then number one, of course, I can't deny this, but a clam pie.
Oh,
and by
bastard,
clam pie...
That's what I was going to say.
I know you were going to say it.
Oh, wait. Maybe we're not saying the same thing.
I was saying clam pizza.
Oh, yeah. That's not what I was going to say. But
you're
go ahead.
Okay. So go ahead.
No,
you're
no.
Free.
Please. I want to hear about clam pie, though. Clam pizza pie.
Well, I just, you know, I recently went to the Frank Pepe's, mm-hmm. right? And there's
never
that,
been.
It's where Yale is in what's the city?
New Haven, Connecticut.
Thank you. I was like New Haven. I kept saying New Haven, Connecticut. And they have lots of locations now, but it's a famous pizzeria and they have this, they're known for the clam pie. Mm. My other favorite one that used to have was Franny's, the old
Loved.
Franny's restaurant in Brooklyn.
Love Franny's clam
and
pie.
I have the recipe, which I'm going to tell you in a second, but I want to hear your three first.
Okay. My top three, my number three is clam pie, but a different kind of clam pie, which is like an actual pie that's baked in a pie crust with clams.
It's like the clam pie of chicken pot pies.
But it's like thicker than that. It doesn't like, you know, whereas chicken pot pie usually is more saucy and you could even eat it with a spoon.
Yeah, yeah.
Clam pie is more, it's like thick. It's like cuts into a slice.
I need to find out more about it.
It's amazing. It's like clams and like leeks. You can put potatoes in it. Heft. It's delicious. And then
that's your number one?
No, my number three.
Oh, number three. Good. Number two?
My number two is... probably clams on the half shell.
Yeah, I mean, that's
just clean
simple.
And simple. Clams on the half shell.
Simple.
And then my number one, I mean, you said spaghetti with clam sauce. That probably is my favorite, but since we've already discussed it, clam chowder.
I mean...
I love clam chowder.
I feel like clam chowder is just... It has its own
like
category.
A clam roll. Like a fried clam roll on like something a hot dog bun.
Suddenly we list 100 things that are our favorite. Like, love, oh, but... Like,
I love that too. But no, I think I probably go like clam pie, fresh clams, really nice clams on the half shell, and clam chowder.
Clam chowder.
Love a clam chowder.
Okay, hold on. Here we go. What's your secret to your clam chowder? Or not? Doesn't
well,
have to be a secret.
I actually used to have a secret, which I've mentioned on the podcast, was instead of thickening it with the roux, I would put lard bread in it, salami bread, and blend it up because it has like...
Lard bread is from the... We've talked about this before in the podcast, but
yeah.
That's okay if you're just tuning in now. What is it?
Mazzola's
or Caputo's.
They make it, you know, sometimes it's called salami bread, prosciutto bread. It's basically just like a lot of black pepper and some like a lot of pecorino and parmigiano.
Fold into a loaf
and
of bread
salami.
And bake.
Yeah. So that's kind of my secret. If I don't use that, that's not something I do all the time. If I was just going to make it at home, I wouldn't do that. But it is a fun trick. I guess just...
It's almost like you're taking the original and you're thickening it with the biscuits. Like
exactly.
Oh, that's fun.
It is cool. Yeah. But to keep it really simple, you know, to use like really nice celery.
Some heavy
potatoes,
cream.
Potatoes, yeah. Cream at the end, but not
do you
like
put bacon
too
in
much.
It?
Absolutely.
Yeah, you have to.
Abso-fucking-lutely bacon.
I forgot to tell you that when you fry, the secret to the frying the clams, when I was talking about that story earlier, was that they had to be fried in lard.
Mm.
And that was one of the things that they were fried in lard.
That's amazing. That sounds delicious.
Okay.
Well, and then for our chef recommends this week, I thought we could talk about anything. But one thing I do want to ask you, Breton, can I ask you a question? Breton,
yeah. Do I have a choice?
No, you must answer all under penalty of death. I wanted to ask you, and you can ask me something else. But I wanted to ask you, what are some tricks that you have of like secret sneaky things you can use clam juice for?
Okay. I was about to tell you the recipe, but this is a thing that I knew because I used to work at Franny's.
Okay.
I know personally I don't know the recipe for sure, but there's a cookbook, so you can buy it.
Yeah.
But here's what I decided after much experimentation is you take the clam juice.
Okay.
Right? And you can make your... You can buy clams in a... They sell them at Trader Joe's, and you can buy them and there's juice with it.
Oh, really?
Don't throw the juice away.
No,
keep
the juice.
That's the goal.
The juice
that's
is loose.
The juice, the liquor, the clam liquor. That's the nectar of the gods.
Yeah, it is.
So you take the clam juice and you cook it down, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not with the clams. You cook it separately. And if you steam some clams, and I always throw some white wine. You can throw beer in there.
Yeah.
I mean, you could throw water, but why not, you know, throw some white wine.
Yeah.
Nice dry white wine. And you take that juice, that clam liquor, and you cook it down over medium heat in your pan. You reduce it, and then you add some heavy cream.
Mm.
And I put a little vermouth.
Perfect.
And you add vermouth, sherry, and you just add, and then you reduce that cream. And remember, do you remember when I did that last time? Yeah. And I like,
it was unbelievable.
It was too good that I froze. I was like, I don't want to, like, I want to I freeze know. This.
It and was then, so good.
I have a habit of like thinking something's too good. And then I put it in the freezer and then 6 months later, I'm like, oh, I got to throw it out. And I'm like, Bretton, just use it when you have
it. I know.
It. So that's the major thing. Okay. Oh, throw it in a Bloody Mary.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah, Clamato.
Throwing in a Bloody Mary is great. And I always keep like clam juice like in the freezer. Like I don't have it at any given moment.
I always have.
You open up my freezer. It's just like there's like a severed hand and like 10 quarts of clam juice. What's this all about? No, nothing. The clam juice, nothing.
It's a lamb head, a severed hand, and 10 quarts of clam juice. You never know.
Who knows when you need any of that stuff?
When the queen comes over, you have to be prepared.
Exactly. Well, there's a couple things
what
that
if Trump comes into your apartment?
Yeah, well, then that's where the hand comes in.
Sorry, that's our other podcast. Go ahead.
The other podcast.
Moving forward.
What to do if Trump accidentally comes over. One thing that I love using clam juice for is like unexpected things. Like instead of boiling potatoes in water, like boil them in clam juice.
New England chicken stock.
Really delicious. And then you can do like you could just have potatoes and like make them a little bit brothy. Put some like olive oil on there.
Oh, yeah.
And you got a stew going. Or rice.
Yeah.
Also really, really great. Or any kind of, you know, with pasta, if you're really going to make pasta the right way and you're going to do like a mounted butter sauce, it's usually always going to come with a little pat of butter and then you're going to use some water or some kind of liquid stock, something like that. So, you know, think about instead of just like using water or stock, like chicken stock or vegetable stock, next time you're going to do like a pasta and you're going to mount your sauce.
I'll tell you this, Google boer and boul.
Yes, Google boer.
Boermonte.
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 Bel.
Which means mounted butter. Go on YouTube. There's some videos. We should have our own videos. We will. Branding, marketing, sex thing. All right. Gotta go.
Sex by.
Edit.
Edit it. Don't kidding.
Sexting.
Don't kidding.
Napster, Papster, Blaster.
Napster, Friendster, Pets.com. What about you? Do you have a question for me about clams?
Well.
Ask away.
Yeah, I do have a question.
Okay, good.
Since you're from the East Coast, if, let's say I say, oh, Zara, I want to make some linguine with clams, and I went to Whole Foods,
yeah,
and they had cherry stones and manilas. What's the difference, and when should I use what for what?
Perf. Love answering a question like this. Yeah. So, if you want to make
Perfect. Shut the fuck up. Here's the answer.
And welcome to me. So, manila clams would be a situation where I would steam them. I'm going to give you a recipe for what I would do. I would steam them. I take them out of the shell. You have the clam broth. You strain the clam broth so you don't get sand. And then you have these nice little, beautiful, perfect, plump, mini manila clams. You throw them in at the last minute to heat everything up. You pick up your sauce. You mount your sauce with your clam stock. It's delicious. If I had cherry stone clams or even little necks, I would steam them. I would take them out of the shell, do exactly the same method.
And they're a little bit bigger, right?
They're bigger.
And they come in different sizes.
And they're tougher. A cherry stone is big, you know? So also with a baked clam, I would do the exact same thing. I would steam it, I take it out of the shell, and I chop it up.
Okay.
And then instead of having it whole. And when you get that big chop, like, you know, you go to your favorite like Italian place and it has like the sauce with all the clams, it's all chopped up. You know, that's usually what they're doing. They're bigger clams. They're cherry stones.
All right. Well, now we
but
know.
I love that. I really like that. You know, you can either chop it or like sometimes you just really like we used to like grind it. Really hard. Sometimes we would take it and grind it up and add it, make like a seafood sausage or a seafood bolognese, which
grind
is also
it, chop
fun.
It, whip it.
Whip it. Whip it.
Spike it. Boil it.
Put it in a can. Put it in a drink. Make a clam.
All right. Well, clam that.
So yeah, chef recommends doing that. And chef recommends, oh, also how to tell when you get a bad clam. Because I think clams can be fear. People can have a lot of fear.
Well, you can get real sick.
You can get really, really, really sick.
You can also get sick from spinach.
Absolutely.
Just so everybody knows.
100%. But how to know when a clam isn't good. Listen, clams breathe, so they will open up. So not every clam that you have that's open is a bad clam. All you have to do is squish its little two halves of shell back together, and if it doesn't stay shut, then it's a bad clam.
Oh, the old, like...
If you smell it, and it smells like the, you know, depths of despair... It's a bad clam. If the shell's broken, it's a bad clam.
Listen to your body when it says, oh my God, that kind of smells like a combination of garbage, poop,
yeah,
and rotting brains.
That's bad.
Bad.
And, you know.
And that 50-cent clam is not,
it's
worth,
not worth it.
The toilet visits the next day.
Not at all. No. So that's
the amount of toilet paper that you go through is,
it's,
you know.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I use a portable.
Or corn cobs. Yeah. Like I switched to corn cobs since our last episode.
I use a portable bidet, so don't worry about it.
That's the worst thing I can imagine.
It's a like portable bidet?
I'm just picturing like a backpack that like turns into like an ass washing station.
Like it's like a water bottle.
Oh, perfect.
They're going to be trending in 2021.
What about corn cobs?
I just find them to be...
Too scratchy? Too invasive?
bulky.
Oh, you know, it's like almost... I'm picturing like a corn cob bidet being like, you know, the glass washing thing that you have at a bar? And you stick the glass on it and it washes the inside.
Okay, so visualize.
Life's a banquet. The rest is just details.
Yeah.
Guys, so, did you have fun?
Yeah. Go ahead. Email us, please. We loved your emails last week.
We did.
Nobody asked a cooking question, so please email us and we'll answer any questions next week. Life's a Banquet Show at gmail.com and Instagram Life's a Banquet Podcast.
Mm-hmm. And also visit our Patreon page, which is there's a link in our bio on our Instagram for Patreon. If this all sounds Greek to you, don't worry, it sounds Greek to us. We're in our 30s and 40s, but we're trying to stay hip and current. But we also really need your support to keep the show getting better. If you feel like you're finding yourself bored or annoyed, it's because we don't have any money.
Yeah. Or potentially, you know, I need young blood that I could do a blood transfusion with. Apparently that's a thing in Wall Street. Yeah.
Exactly. Please visit our Patreon page so Bretton and I can each get a blood transfusion every morning from young hot millennials.
Perfect.
And then we'll be great. We'll be way funnier.
Yeah. Well, all right.
Gluten-free bread bowls. Oh, cheers.
Don't forget, cheers. Enjoy fall. Get your quinces roasted.
Yeah.
And your allspice. Zara, when I walked in, and this is our final note, do yourself a favor and put a bottle. Yes,
we're
that's
drunk.
True. Open a bottle and put a pot of some lemon, some apples, and some cinnamon sticks and allspice and cloves, and then just boil it.
Boil it on the stove.
And people will think, who cares what people think? You'll think.
It makes your house smell really nice.
Yeah. I walked in, I felt an instant sense of home.
It's great. Well, for me, like I've been cooking a lot at home for like projects for
work. Lots of garlic and meatballs.
And it stinks, you know? And then like you walk in, your house like smells weird and it's like so uninviting.
I used to cook a lot of fried food.
Yeah.
And that's the smell after, like while you're cooking, you're like, French fries, but...
It's really lame. And like, so just, you know, I was thinking of a bunch of things you could do. Also, picture your house like it's a big refrigerator. I also put out things of baking soda.
It's a big refrigerator.
Absorb. Yeah.
Except that it doesn't.
Coffee.
Except that if you leave meat out in your house, it goes bad.
So oh, is that really? Because I've had like some clams just sitting out for like 4 days and I've been wondering why there's so many buzzards.
Oh,
at
I thought
window.
That was the PCP. No wonder I felt whacked.
Guys, we love you.
We love you too. Thank you for subscribing. Thank you for listening. We had a record-breaking download last week.
Corn.
Thank you. Yeah, who would have thought corn?
Who freaking knew corn? People thought, guys, we did an episode on food and sex. Everyone was like, eh.
You put the word masturbation in a title
That's
and people
true.
Are like, oh, what?
Please write in if anybody masturbated to the episode. We
want to
know. Send pictures. Bye. Hasta la pasta. All of our episodes are recorded right here at Studio 54 at the heart of Fort Greene, Brooklyn. Our rock star award-winning sound editor and producer is Christine Farrell. I'm Zara Tangora.
And I'm Bretton Scott. And we'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening.